How long can interest rates stay low? Central bankers the world over are between a rock and a hard place. If they raise rates, potential deflation. If they keep them the same, potential asset bubbles. And if for some unforeseen reason they need to lower rates further, many countries are at or near 0% interest rates and cannot go lower, the so-called zero lower bound. Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. I'm Bob Denham, and today I'm here at the London School of Economics with Professor Sir Charles Bean, former Deputy Governor of the Bank of England and renowned expert on macroeconomics. We're discussing the launch of the 17th Annual Geneva Report titled Low for Long, Causes and Consequences of Persistently Low Interest Rates. I started by asking Professor Bean to summarise the report in 30 seconds.
First of all, the key driver in the decline in underlying interest rates over the past 20 years is savings, and in particular, demographics driving the savings. And what's been important here is the relative size of the cohort that save a lot, the middle-aged, relative to those who dissave, who are in retirement. The good news is that the relative sizes of those two cohorts is starting to shift. So going forward, as the bulge of high-saving middle-age move into retirement, we'll see upward pressure on underlying real interest rates. However, that's a process that will happen only slowly, and that means that we're likely to be in this world of relatively low interest rates for some time to come. That means central banks have less scope to stimulate the economy through cutting interest rates. There are unconventional policies, but there are also risks that go with them. And one of the concerns has to be that a prolonged period of low interest rates encourages unnecessarily risky investment behaviour by financial market participants and households as they try to generate higher returns.
When we think of interest rates, we think that's being something that's set by the central bank. Is that helpful for understanding low interest rates?
Not over the longer term, really. The key thing is that central banks, if they're going to achieve their mandates of stabilising inflation and keeping output at potential, most of the time are going to have to be setting interest rates at whatever level is consistent with that. Central bank rates can deviate temporarily from those rates. They often need to, say, because of oil price shocks and the like. But in thinking about the general level of interest rates, it's these real factors that are actually the key determinant.
And what are the real factors over the last 20 years that have affected the world of monetary policy?
So there's a number of different hypotheses out there. What we do in the report is go back and look at some of these competing hypotheses and see which ones stack up a bit better against the data. The ones which look more persuasive to us, over the whole of the period, a higher propensity to save seems to be important. And I'm talking globally here, of course, it's not particular countries. And in particular, demographics seem to be important. And one thing that is quite noticeable is through the last 20, 25 years or so, the ratio between the population share of the middle-aged, who are the people who tend to do most of the saving for their retirement, relative to the older people, who are the people who do the dissaving, the retirees, that difference in population shares has been moving in favour of the high savers. And we think that's an important factor which has been helping to push up the propensity to save.
One argument for low interest rates might be that since the financial crisis, there has been more demand for safe assets and less demand for taking out loans and making riskier investments. So how do you distinguish between these competing explanations and decide which one is the most important?
So we rely much more on looking at the timing of when various factors moved and see if it ties in with the timing of the decline in interest rates.
So where does this leave us, and where does this leave us looking forward?
Well, in terms of prospects, the fact that the key demographic driver, this difference between the population share of high-saving middle-aged and dis-saving elderly, has started moving in the other direction, is a pointer to the idea that the underlying interest rate, real interest rate, is likely to start drifting back upwards. And it will be reinforced by improving confidence as the financial crisis recedes into history. But I emphasize this is something that we expect to happen pretty slowly, in the same way as it took a couple of decades for the underlying natural real interest rate to fall from around about 4% to something near zero.
20 years is a long time. Where does that leave us right now, especially given the risks to the economy of staying put and the risks of moving and raising interest rates?
Well, the problem is, of course, if the underlying real interest rate rises only slowly, we're going to be in the sort of environment that we've seen in the past few years for some more years to come. What that means is that if there are further adverse shocks, say from China, and that has adverse consequences for people in other countries, then there's very little room to provide further stimulus from, at least from interest rate cuts by central banks. Now, there are other instruments that you can use, most obviously quantitative easing. But one of the things about quantitative easing, the more you use it, the more attendant risks that you may build up. And also there's questions about how effective it'll be, sort of diminishing returns. Moreover, all of these responses miss what we think is probably a more important issue, which is a prolonged period of very low interest rates is likely to encourage households and financial businesses to pursue riskier investment strategies in order to try and lever up the returns they get, what people sometimes refer to as a search for yield. Now, it wouldn't be too much of a problem if it went into productive assets, but if it goes into unproductive financial engineering or drives up house prices, it may be something that would welcome less. Now, one can respond to that by trying to use financial policies or so-called macroprudential policies to try and contain them. Many countries have put in place things like the Financial Policy Committee here in this country. But we shouldn't put too much weight in these new tools. They're relatively untested. People find ways around them. And there may be occasions when you just feel they're not really hitting the parts of the financial sector that you need to. So we actually think it's more helpful to be looking for other policies that might actually just end up raising the natural rate of interest. And the natural place to look here is fiscal and structural policies, which both reduce saving where it's excessive, and I think more particularly encourage investment. We're in a world where more investment will in general be good, and there's plenty of parts of the world that need more infrastructure investment, more private investment, and so forth.
Professor Sir Charles Bean, thank you very much.
Thank you.